it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Gene Bolduc, your host, and I'm joined today by one of our brand new Alder people, although not that new, actually, is Barbara Fouché. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you, Gene. I'm happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. So, you know, we've been talking to get ready to do the show, and I had to hurry up and push the button because the conversation was getting so good. I didn't want to lose any of it. So what we were talking about and what I want to talk about for a few minutes is just, how's it going? Are you playing well with your new friends who are not new friends to you at all, mm-hmm. of course? And are you just enjoying the heck out of being an Alder person on the board for the town of Carrboro? How much do you love this job?
I actually, I do love it. I like being in a position where I can help folks.
Yeah.
Especially folks that may not be heard from.
Right.
The typical people you might see
yeah.
at a meeting. I think everyone cares for our community,
mm-hmm.
And I'm just happy to be in a position where I can advocate on various issues.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So while you're, and you told me that that Damon now is Mayor Pro Tem.
Yes.
Great choice.
Excellent.
For that role.
Mm-hmm.
We both were just, I hope Damon's ears were burning because we were both just saying how wonderful he is. He's not only... You know, you can always tell when somebody's really, really knowledgeable because they'll tell you when they run into something and they don't know the answer.
Yep.
And he is, as we were saying, he's very committed to process. He understands process. He's very committed to fair process
mm-hmm.
and deliberate process, which benefits, you know, pretty much every board. I mean,
yes.
I was reminded while we were talking of one of the first meetings that I covered when I started covering the aldermen for the Chapel Hill Herald in 1999 so. And one of the first meetings that I covered was when the approval, I guess it was, of the quarry had come before the town the board. And this meeting was packed. I mean, it was like, I'm sure that one of the people in that meeting was the fire marshal to get half the people out of the room. But the meeting was absolutely people in every square inch of the room. There was intense public interest in this meeting because it was thought that at this meeting, the final present, there would be a kind of a wrap-up, a summary of presentations to be made to the board. And then the board was going to vote on this gigantic agreement, which I can't even tell you the details of because it's a long time ago. I want to say it was between Owosso and...
Owosso was involved.
And American Stone, right?
American Stone.
And mm-hmm. and this had been at well over a decade in coming.
In the making.
This took a long, long time.
Right.
So our mutual friend, I'm sure, Joel Brown. was on the board.
Yes, she was.
And, of course, Joel is an attorney. Mm-hmm. And so they have all this process going on, and they have these people speaking or whatever. Now, if you've ever seen that agreement, you're a fairly diminutive person. You could probably sit at the table. Somebody could put this document in front of you, and nobody would be able to see the top of your head. This was a gigantic document, bigger than the New York City phone book, easily, mm-hmm. easily. And here's Joel sitting at the table, as I remember this, with this giant document in front.
They all had this
huge document.
This is going to be good.
Because nobody was getting this on a PDF in that time. Everybody
right.
got the paper document. You know, I had to hire a couple of teenagers to bring in my copy so that I could have it in my lap at the meeting. I exaggerate slightly, slightly.
It's fine.
And here's Joel studiously looking at this document. And, you know, everything's kind of going along straight to plan. And then she raises her hand, you know, one finger in the air to be recognized by the mayor. and she's recognized by the mayor, Mike Nelson, our other mutual friend, one of our mutual friends. And yes, Joel. And well, you know, Joel has, you know, these questions, and they are this and this and this and this. And they're, it's hard to explain. You know this. You've been in 1,000 meetings, and now that you're an elected official, you too have kind of a spidey sense of what's happening here. She's asking these questions, and the answers are coming faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
And the faster the answers come, the slower her questions were, because she's not just a lawyer. She's a good lawyer.
Excellent lawyer.
And
you will not pull anything over on
so
that one.
She said, well, I would like, you know, I mean, I know you're telling me you're going to get this for me, but I would like to have that before I make my decision. And they were like, well, you know, we can call this guy, and we can call that guy, you know, and hurry up. It was very obvious that they wanted to hurry up and have her just go ahead and make this. Let's go ahead and vote tonight, and then we'll get that for you.
Mm-mm.
Because after all, we've waited years and years and years to come to this point. And she's like, okay, well, you know, if it's a good decision, and it probably is, it'll still be a good decision in 2 weeks. I hope so.
That's Joel Brown.
Right? I mean, and you know what? That's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't no vote that night.
Mm-hmm. It waited because she had questions.
It's like, I have these questions.
Yeah, I have these questions that need to be answered.
These are reasonable. I'm not just nitpicking here. These are reasonable questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so the waiting was not quite filled. And, you know, people left and were kind of grumbling and frustrated.
It's
and whatever.
Fine.
And I thought, well, you know, that's your job. That's a significant part of your job now as an elected official,
mm-hmm.
is to, in some cases, disregard the clock unless it's a matter of, you know, a grant that whose application period is going to expire or a thing like that.
It usually isn't that type.
You know,
it's not that type of
urgency. Anything comes to you with the
yeah.
last minute and the imprimatur of, you better hurry up because my hair's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it better be, well, here's a bottle of water and you better just calm down and come back.
I love it.
So I imagine that there'll be opportunities of that nature, that you'll run into things that that you just raise your hand and say, well, look, you know, where it's not like this has been 20 years waiting to happen. So the next chance you get to vote on the library, right? When's that going to be, by the way? When are you going to vote on the library?
The library's been voted on and approved.
And approved. And
uh-huh.
and do you all have any more decisions to be made about it? Or
yeah.
Like the design of the building and all that, that's all
yeah.
approved?
Actually, we've had our first interview presentations from the two architectural firms,
mm-hmm.
That staff has whittled it down to
right.
two.
Right.
CRA, JSA, which is a local architectural firm,
mm-hmm.
they're collaborating. Jim Spencer Architects is a part of
right.
part of that. And then you have Perkins Plus Will,
okay.
a more global type of architectural firm.
Hmm.
They're also connected with the Freelon Group.
Okay. That's a good connection to have.
Right. So we've had our first round of interviews, presentations with them. We'll get another shot on March the 6th.
Okay.
And I think after that, we as a board will vote on who the architect is going to be for the new library.
Well, that's great. We're airing on March 4th.
Okay.
So good. So this will be just before that
uh-huh.
happens. And again, when I started covering the aldermen, they were first talking about the library. They decided to settle on the library that was in the
Century Center.
And but always wanted to keep that moving forward to
mm-hmm.
actually get a physical
library.
Well,
it's here, and it's going to occur.
Yeah. And you know, the people who had their kids in strollers are now grandparents, and they're there with their grandchildren.
The grandchildren will
going,
go to
yeah,
the library.
I'm bringing my grandkid to the library for, you know, a cat in the hat.
That I've
I'm
been
still,
talking
I'm
about
still
for
waiting.
20 years.
That's right. And now I'm going to make good on it as a grandmother, right? So that's cool, and I'm really glad. Good things are worth waiting for,
mm-hmm.
including, you know, your term on the on the Board of Aldermen. So we, you know, all of Carrboro had to wait a little while for that because you're not quite fresh out of college. You're a little bit older than that.
I'm way older than that.
A little bit older than that. Yeah. So we don't discuss numbers around here since we're hitting some this year.
Let's
we don't
not.
Need to talk about those. It's just a number anyway.
That's all it is.
So here's a number. Here's a number. One. So one is the number of segment that we're in. We're in the first segment of the Weekend Water Cooler, and segment two will be coming up in just a moment after a few brief words from the wonderful, wonderful people and businesses that bring the Weekend Water Cooler to our listeners. And we're going to hear from them, and then we're going to be back with Alderwoman Barbara Fouché, who is going to regale us with stories about, oh my goodness, just about everything. You just have no idea. She's so full of, you know, stories. We just love talking to her. We always have a good time. And don't you go away. We're going to be right back with more of the Weekend Water Cooler here on WCHL 97.9 The Hill. And we're back with Barbara Fouché. We were just talking about the joy of campaigning. It's so tough. Barbara, come on. If you wanted to run marathons, you should have just run. You probably do run. You're a runner, aren't you?
I do not run. I walk.
Seriously?
I walk a lot. I get a lot of people to ask me if I'm a runner. I'm not a runner. I walk a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, thank goodness you had Quentin because I'm telling you. Oh, man. It's brutal.
Best campaign manager ever.
And he'd drag you around and say, come on, we're going to just knock on 10 more doors.
We got to do this.
We got to do 10 more.
We got to do this.
You really do need that. You need a person who's just going to be.
And he was that person.
You need this major cheerleading person.
He was that person.
To do this for you. And anybody who's running for office needs that. It's not you.
You do.
And he's so come back, Quentin, come back to the water cooler. I miss you. I haven't seen you for over 10 minutes, so I miss you. But it's such a job. It's a great, great thing to run for office. I ran for office in 94. I was not successful. Thank you, good people of Orange County, for having that good
what
judgment.
What did you run for?
I ran for school board.
Oh, school board. Okay.
I ran for school board in 94, you know, the year of the Republican Revolution and and all that. And Gene was never going to get elected to the school board in 1994. It's not really
that
gonna,
was too much.
Yeah.
You were too
was,
much for them.
Well, but, you know, I really was such a reasonable person back then. Not now, but, you know.
Oh, you don't think you're reasonable now?
No, I don't. I don't fashion myself a reasonable person now. A reasonable person would never do some of the things that I do. See, this is where we should be doing Facebook Live, because then we would have Barbara just losing it laughing because I said that.
I'm okay, though.
Yeah. Get yourself up to the microphone here so everybody can hear you not laughing at me.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so listen, Barbara, we have to go all serious just for half a second in our own way. You know, in the last week we had this terrible, we're recording on the 23rd, and we had this terrible event in Parkland, Florida, which is the latest in a long line of terrible events just like it. And I was talking to Aaron on the air this afternoon, and we were just talking about the youth movement that's exploded onto the national scene as a result of that, in the wake of it, probably not exactly as a result of it. I think it's also related to the Women's March and all of the things that happened last year. Not any one thing, but just the cumulative strength of that movement. And I really think that we've hit a tipping point that's going to be very different. The prediction I made on Aaron's show this afternoon, I told him to hit record so that we would have it on his show. We'll have it on mine too. My prediction is, I'd like to know your thoughts. My prediction is that next year, the Congress is going to turn pink. That the Congress is going to be majority female next year. What do you think about that?
I think that there is a very, very good chance that that is correct.
If it isn't that, it's going to be really,
it's going to
really
be
close.
Really, really big, close.
Big numbers.
Because
big
we
numbers.
Have a lot of women jumping into different races all over the country.
More than twice as many women as have ever run
have
before.
Ever
and
run
it's
before.
Off, and it's off year.
Yeah.
And it's off year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were one of the bad guys, and I'll just leave that category for anybody who wants to identify themselves with it. If you're one of the bad guys, this should make you very nervous.
Yeah.
You know, the threat to structural racism, misogyny, income inequality, these structures that are built to protect themselves against this kind of wave, mm-hmm. it's all going down,
yep.
isn't it?
Yep.
Through a simple democratic process of just everybody just get out and vote. And because you have so many people running for office on platforms that are pro-kids, pro-women, pro-families, safe workplaces, safe schools. You know, you and I, I'm sure, have been talking about this stuff for 25 years. Mm-hmm. I wrote a grant in 1993 for safe schools. 1993.
Wow.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, people think of Columbine as the first school shooting. It wasn't. There were school shootings in Arkansas, in all over the country. I don't want to name check states because I don't want to leave anybody out. And North Carolina in 1993 had a grant program for the Safe Schools Act or something of that nature, where they created a fund of $1 million, which sounded like a lot of money at the time, to help schools pay for school resource officers, for them to start pilot programs and help schools to become safer. In those days, if kids got engaged in a kerfuffle at school, if they got into an assault at school, they wouldn't be arrested because the schools would keep all of that sealed as part of your student record and all that stuff, and it really was getting out of control. It wasn't mass shootings, but there were shootings, there were deaths, there were violent attacks, there were gang problems. And the state of North Carolina, a progressive state at the time, created this fund and said, you know, if you want to fund a couple of resource officers for your school, you can write a proposal for how you're going to do this and what you're going to do with the money and what you're going to do with the program, more importantly. And I wrote a grant for the schools, for Orange County schools. This is such a wonderful government thing. They approved the program. But the grant had run out of money. So, like, so it's $1 million. It sounds like a lot of money, but there were a lot of programs that were thought to be worthy programs, but they ran out of money. So we applied again for a DOJ grant, for a crime prevention grant under Department of Justice, and got resource officers for Orange High School and CW Stanford funded through that program for 2 years. And that's what started the resource officer program in Orange County schools. That's been very successful since then. I mean, and I heard the president talking today, and he said, see, Barbara's making a face because I mentioned the Cheeto man. He said, the officers at school, you know, they don't love the kids. Teachers love the kids, and this is his argument. I try to stay with me. This is his argument
I'm already lost.
for why teachers should be armed, which is the most ridiculous.
I'm sure it was pretty ridiculous, whatever you're getting ready to say.
It was already pretty ridiculous, the idea that that your geometry teacher should be packing. But this was his argument, is that, well, teachers love their students, and that's why they should have guns, because they love their students and they will take out the attacker. You know, the school resource officer, or the deputy that might be at the school, he doesn't love the kids like the teachers do. Well, that's just not true.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. I have to laugh.
You know these officers, and I know them.
It's just ridiculous.
And they do love the kids. They adore them.
And they will
them.
Do and their
the,
job.
And the kids
well,
love them back.
Except for the deputy in Florida who didn't do his job.
Well, you know, he didn't, but I honestly...
Let me
come back to this process. I'd really like to hear his story. I hope at some point
he'll come and say
someday
something.
We'll be able to hear his story.
Because he eventually resigned, didn't he?
He resigned. He was suspended immediately. He resigned. But, you know, there also have been teachers already from the school who have come forward and said, don't malign him. He may have done the right thing. It wouldn't do him any good to run in with a single sidearm and take on a guy who is spraying bullets in every direction, who is surrounded by other kids. It's just a fantasy that he was going to come in and somehow pick off the shooter when he's surrounded by other innocent people.
But you know, there are
just
as many.
I just would want to hear his side of it first.
But there are just as many people on the other side of that who will probably say you should have gone in because it was your job.
Well, I think that's right.
You know what I mean?
But then you have a very good point there,
and I cannot disagree with you on that.
I'd want to hear.
That's a whole other side. Yeah. So I appreciate you sharing that.
And the kids too. I mean, there were a lot of people around. There were a lot of kids around. And you know, when they can, I think it's going to be really interesting to hear how that whole story pieces together and to really learn whether or not he would have had an opportunity. I can tell you, I don't think he can really know what his opportunity was or wasn't by staying out of the building.
Sounds like he was okay, though, as a, you know— Obviously, he had been there, so he has some support from even some of the staff at the school.
Right.
And just saying, you know, like he was okay. And maybe he did do the right thing from what was happening versus what he had to, like one sidearm, like you said. So that makes perfect sense.
And here's my other question.
So it's two sides to that.
There's probably 12 sides to that.
It's just
my other question is for the sheriff who he works for is, okay, sheriff, what's your procedure? What's his training? What's your procedure?
What is
for
he
him
supposed to do?
What was your procedure that he should have followed?
For an active shooter at the school.
And when he can, one thing I know for sure is that he probably was able to hear pop, 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 pop from his position.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, Sheriff, and show me in your procedures what he was supposed to have done.
What was he supposed to do?
You're supposed to walk in with a weapon that's going to shoot maybe 12 bullets. Right? And you're supposed to walk into somebody with an automatic
weapon.
And
he was spraying.
And so I would want to know, I'd want to see evidence that this is what he should have done. This is what his training taught him to do. And he was negligent. Then I'm listening. But I'm so reluctant to just take the bait and you know, crucify the guy. The guy's got cops around his house now protecting his family.
Because that's for all the folks that felt like he should have went into school.
I know it. Yeah. And emotionally, that's where I am, too, because I feel the same way. But you bring up a very valid point.
That is a very valid point.
We'll see how
it plays out. What is the procedure for an active shooter at the school?
What
was the deputy supposed to do?
What are the drills?
What is it?
And the kid pulled a fire alarm. That's how he got the kids out in the hallway. It's how he flooded the hallways with kids. He pulled the fire alarm to get them out of their classrooms.
Smart and crazy.
Yeah, that's a bad
combination.
That's
usually how it is.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we got a lot of work to do. We're going to come back and talk about this some more. We're talking to Barbara Frusci about things that matter here on the Weekend Water Cooler at 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back with Barbara Frusci in the cleaned up version of the Weekend Water Cooler. And we were just talking about the president. Let's just be straight about it. We're just going to be real with our listeners because our listeners rely on us for some comic relief, which we all need in our lives right now. It's exactly true. You know, we're living in a crazy time, Barbara. It's a crazy time.
It is.
And you know, I just oh my goodness. There's so much to cover in so little time. So many things happen over a week that trying to follow the craziness that comes out of the Trump administration is like trying to drink from a fire hose. Mm-hmm. You know that.
I don't watch the news when that's happening.
No, you're just making the news.
I'm not making it. I just don't watch it. I prefer to read about it because I just can't look at it. It's just too. I just can't.
It's too upsetting.
Yeah, it's too upsetting. Yeah. But I do read about it. I keep up with it, but I can't stand to look at it.
It's an alarming thing to see someone who is actually, just to be real for half a second, I'll get over it quick.
I'm scared. What you gonna say?
It is unnerving to watch someone who is so completely ill-equipped for his job
and has no idea.
Watching him try to do his job.
No idea what to do.
He doesn't even know what the job is.
Nope.
He really doesn't.
Nope.
He doesn't. I think that he will leave office during his first term, not at his own instigation, not under his own power. I think he'll have help getting to the door. After all,
I love the way you put that. Maybe, I think he'll have help getting to the door.
I heard an expression many years ago about somebody shining his shoes on your butt, and the idea was he was going to give you a kick in the butt and get you moving or
get you in gear.
Yeah, and so it became the shorthand of don't make me shine my shoes on you, you know, that's what's going to happen. I mean, he's under increasing pressure as we record on this Friday afternoon. Boy, do we have a case of the Fridays, you and me, always. I wake up with that on Monday. So, as we record this Friday, one of his campaign officials, Rick Gates, has pleaded guilty to conspiracy against the United States of America. I have to tell you, just seeing that in writing,
that's a big charge
on a document.
That's a big charge.
Would knock most people back pretty hard.
And he won't be going to jail for a long period of time. Why, Gene?
Well, because he pleaded guilty and has an agreement with the special prosecutor.
Exactly.
And the special prosecutor, in order to agree to this, had to be convinced that he had something from the bigger fish that he could offer.
So he's going to talk, isn't he, Gene?
He's gonna sing like a little bird.
Yes, he is.
Like a little Tweety bird.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all going to just sit at the piano and play along and listen while he sings like a bird to the special prosecutor. And what's interesting is I saw all this broken down last night, and I'm watching the news, and I'm there with, like with a bowl of popcorn. I'm flipping back and forth between this and the Olympics. I don't know if you watched the figure skating last night, but oh my goodness, everybody was falling. And I thought, can no one just jump in the air and skate anymore? This is just getting nerve-wracking. But anyway, I'm sitting there. I'm eating as much popcorn watching the news as I was watching the figure skating and the bobsledding. And the amazing story of Rick Gates and Paul Manafort and what they did in early 2016 and how they incredibly were applying to banks all over the place. For loans for millions and millions of dollars, and were being turned down, okay, because of a lack of income and insufficient assets to secure the loan. And they're turned down repeatedly. Mm. And so what they did is they would request from their bookkeeper, send us a profit and loss statement. And send it to us in a Microsoft Word document because we're going to need to make some changes in it. Okay, no, that's not $150,000 is not enough income. We need to add a zero to that income number so we can get this loan, right? So they requested these profit loss statements from the bookkeeper. You know what the bookkeeper said? Listen, folks, if you ever feel like you don't have power in your job, just remember this: they're a little old bookkeeper. For their company. Their bookkeeper said the magic word. No. No, I will not send you fake profit and loss statements. So they made them up themselves. You know that bookkeeper? You know what that bookkeeper's name is? No, you don't. You know why? There ain't going to be no indictment for the bookkeeper because the bookkeeper said, say it with me, friends. No.
Bookkeeper said, I'm not going to jail.
I'm not going to jail
Y'all
for you.
Y'all going to jail, but I'm not going to jail. That's what the bookkeeper said. Bookkeeper got good common sense.
You know,
knew the direction that it was going.
Honest to goodness. I mean, in bookkeeping.
Amazing.
You know, one of the things that you know is that you don't get to make the numbers up. I think they teach you that in bookkeeping school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how
it has to be. Whatever it is,
it is what it is, right?
So
they applied for these loans multiple times. Multiple financial institutions were told no again and again and again until finally a bank in Illinois said yes. Right after Paul Manafort got put on the Trump campaign, a job that he agreed to do for nothing, And somebody, I think, on his board of this bank in Illinois wanted to be the Secretary of the Army. And so it turns out Paul Manafort, it looks like, offered kind of a quid pro quo for, you know, you give us this $16 million loan. You know, Barbara, if I asked you to borrow $20 until next week, you know what you'd say? You'd say no. You'd be the bookkeeper. No, Gene, no. I'm going to need to see some collateral for that.
How do I know I'm going to get my 20 bucks back, Gene?
And I'll tell you that I'll give you the total value of my salary for doing the weekend water cooler, and that's how you'll know that I'll pay you back.
Okay.
And you would say no.
I'd probably still
that
say
is
no.
$0.
It's
but anyway.
Nothing.
Anyway, but you know,
done for free.
What is so amusing about all this, of course, is that crooks are stupid, aren't they? I mean, can you get
always
over these guys, how they just they're sitting there on their computers in Microsoft Word just making up numbers, and they created fake invoices. They created all these documents. And of course, their computer, as you know, indicates who the author of the document is by whose computer it is. They're so dumb, I can't get over it.
But I just really feel that, you know, sometimes people just get so wrapped up in the wrongness and doing wrong and trying to get ahead that they just feel like they're untouchable, that they would never get caught anyway.
And here's the other thing. If Donald Trump had not won, they wouldn't have been caught.
Nope.
There'd be no special prosecutor.
Nobody would care. But because he won and because there's so much
it's just like the producers
swirling around
this. It's like the producers.
This.
They promised this thing, and they everybody thought that he wasn't going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, oh, yeah, you know, it's going to, you know, listen, we'll get you a job in the administration. It's going to be great. And now they're guilty of fraud. Guess what? That's fraud.
Ridiculous.
See, you would never do that. You would never
do
that.
I don't have time for
that. You don't have time for
that.
But we're going to come back and we're going to talk about things that you do have time for, which is the Affordable Housing Summit that you just came from.
Woo.
And you're going to tell us all the great things that you heard about at that summit and all the things that you told them, because I know you straightened everybody out there.
Actually, and,
yeah,
I said nothing,
exactly,
but okay.
Right. Okay, but okay. But we can just pretend. We can talk about what you said to yourself in your head. When we continue with Barbara Fouché here on the Weekend Water Cooler, you're listening to 97.9 The Hill. We're back for our final moments here with the wonderful, the talented Barbara Fouché. Barbara, you have just come this Friday afternoon on the 23rd of February from the Affordable Housing Summit. Did you need mountain climbing equipment to get to the summit?
No.
The summit, get it? Yeah, okay. It's a little mountain joke there.
That's funny.
Yeah. Okay. So how was the summit?
It actually was really good. It was held at St. Thomas More, sponsored by the Orange County Affordable Housing Coalition, led up by Susan Levy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of things that most of us in the room knew already, but there were numbers put to it in a way that we had not seen before and just made it more real and more apparent that we absolutely need more affordable housing in Orange County.
When you measure things, you end up laying out the map for how to fix them.
Exactly.
So you see a number that pops up over
here. Yeah. And today it was like multiple numbers in a whole lot of different areas.
Yeah. What's the most striking thing? What was the thing that you learned that surprised you? Because you've been around this issue for a long time, so not easy to surprise Barbara Fouché on this issue.
I think that a lot of people that are in need of affordable housing are falling somewhere between 60% and 80% of AMI.
Hmm.
That's like a lot of the people.
Yeah.
I think that was really surprising to me because I'm thinking less than that, right?
Yeah.
Is what I'm thinking. So that was a surprising number for me. And just seeing the number that we did have for affordable housing, and I'm just thinking that's a drop in the bucket as far as the number of affordable units,
right?
Which I think it actually was somewhere around 1700, 1800, maybe. But anyway, the percentage was like 3%. So it was pretty low.
Right.
And we recognized the challenges. There were some comments about reviewing the rural buffer.
Right.
Which I know some people are absolutely against that. We understand the reason for the rural buffers to prevent the urban sprawl, but we also understand the other side of the coin that it drives up, you know, the price of housing otherwise, because you can't move into the rural buffer and do anything. I mean, it was set up, it was designed that way, you know, like years ago. And there are still folks guarding that door.
Right.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
What you also need to understand is that folks need somewhere to live.
That's right.
They do better when they have a home. Mm-hmm. We also talked about using a more holistic approach and just showing how all that connects. Because having housing connects to a lot of things, like mental and physical health.
That's right.
You have to add economic stability. Yeah, you have to add all that into the equation.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I probably would be pretty nutty if I didn't have a place that I called home to go to every day with four walls and a roof.
I don't want to see that, Barbara.
You sure don't.
No,
my hair would be standing
on
end.
You don't want to see that.
It wouldn't be curled
either.
Up like this. That's it would be standing on end. So I can only imagine, what it was like. I know we did have one lady that shared a story that she was homeless for 3 months and she had a job.
Right.
But she got priced out of where she was living. Her rent, like, doubled.
Yeah.
She couldn't afford it. And she said, I was in the woods for 3 months.
See,
and
people
had
don't
a job.
Realize that there are people who are homeless who are living here.
Yeah, has a graduate degree.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
Oh.
She had income. But then, you know, you got to think, too, outside of the cost of housing, people have other responsibilities. You know, you got the utilities, you got the food, you got medical care. If you got a vehicle, you got everything associated with that.
Right.
So, of course, the bottom line is if you're paying greater than 30% of your income,
that's right, then your housing
is unaffordable.
Your
housing is unaffordable.
That
was one of the first slides that the young lady presented.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, if you're putting 40-50% of your income in the housing,
that's right,
that means you're missing something somewhere else. You're telling the car man, hey, I can't pay you the car payment, all of it this month, because I got to pay my rent. Got to have somewhere to live.
Right.
We can't buy this medicine.
Yeah, sorry about your medicine.
You're right. You know, it's just different things.
Right.
So,
and the quality of your food and your nutrition suffers. And, of course, then so does your health.
It's a trickle-down effect.
It is. And you know, I've always thought of, you know, housing and transportation and employment is the three-legged stool. You can't take one away without collapsing the other two.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me like, and we have just a couple minutes left, but it seems to me like the gap that we have is we've just got to build more affordable units. We've got to find a way to incentivize that to happen. And if as a politician, but also just as a citizen, it seems to me that with our situation with the rural buffer, that you're either looking at going up or going out, or you're not serious about solving this problem. It's going to have to be one or the other.
Up.
So if that's the choice, then
I mean, I like up versus
then
out.
Then
just
let's go up versus out.
Yeah. But everybody, you know, everybody doesn't have, you know, the same views. And people have some pretty strong views about that going up, you know, what that looks like and how it'll change the character of a community, you know, and different things like that.
Right. So, I mean, I remember, you know, driving down Rosemary Street in Chapel Hill toward Carrboro. And I know that as I drive down there, I think back about 40 years ago when I came to this community, and I think, well, you know, this isn't what Chapel Hill looked like. This looks kind of like one block over from Fayetteville Street in Raleigh near the NC State campus. Mm. It looks more like there than how I think
especially
of Chapel
with that
Hill.
New hotel.
Yeah,
that new hotel is there.
But you know, so what? I don't know that that's wrecked anybody's quality of life because there are tall buildings in downtown Chapel Hill. I think
growth is good if it's the right kind of growth for the right kind of reasons. And I think that our community just will not be sustainable without some growth, without, you know, some change.
Right.
Because something has got to happen.
I mean, when the housing becomes more affordable, then you also have more money to spend in restaurants and buy clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about this incessantly and drive people crazy that, you know, if you want to spend money in a restaurant, you want people to, you know, have time to play with their kids and not, you know, have three jobs and, you know, leave their kids, you know, alone at risk because they have to be out working the
mm-hmm.
night shift. This is what you have to do. You have to build affordable housing to make
right.
that happen.
Right.
It's in many ways, it's really not rocket science. It's just housing.
Yeah.
Right.
But and then another thing that came out of that really quickly is YIMBY, which is acronym for Yes in My Backyard. That is another thing that came out of it, and it's another aspect to it. I very much believe in mixed income communities.
Right.
I am not right. against that because I think it also can go a long ways towards a cultural shift.
Yep.
You understand me. I understand you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm living here in the neighborhood with you. We get to know each
right.
other. Our kids play together.
And
we interact
interests,
with each other.
Our interests are the same.
Right. So that was something else really cute that I thought came out. I was like, YIMBY.
I like it.
Yes,
wanna,
in my backyard.
I want a T-shirt that says that.
YIMBY.
YIMBY. Well, Barbara, you know, apparently an hour has expired. I can't believe that that's true.
Hour 503.
It's, you know, it's just ridiculous, but it's true.
And, it's gone.
And it's another hour of your life that you're never getting back because you spent it on the weekend water cooler, but I'm really glad that you did.
I was glad to be asked to come.
Thank you so much for joining us, and please come back again and again. Until I stop answering your calls.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a long, long time, but I'm so happy to see you and so happy that you're enjoying your job and doing a great job on the board. And just keep up the good work. Keep your head up.
Yep.
All
plan
right.
to. Thank
All
you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Barbara. And everybody, go off and have a great weekend. Turn off the cable news and listen only to WCHL. And we'll see you again next weekend at the Water Cooler.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.